Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Shavua Tov. Today is Sunday, November 21st. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing. Quick reminder about Streetwise Hebrew for the Times of Israel community. Sign up at the Times of Israel website and you'll get bite-sized audio Hebrew classes. I'm joined today by our founding editor, David Horovitz, and diplomatic correspondent, Lazer Berman. Hello to you both.
Hey, Jessica.
Good morning, Shavua Tov.
We're going to discuss a couple of things, more than a couple. We've got Israel relations with the UK, as well as the UK decision to designate Hamas as a terror organization. And Lazer's going to tell us about his run with the UAE ambassador and a scoop about the State Department. Let's start with the UK's decision Friday to designate Hamas as a terror organization and outlaw support for the group. David, you want to get us started on that?
Yeah, it's sort of the completion of a process. Hamas, in its so-called military wing, I suppose, has long been banned. But this legislation, or this planned legislation, this declared legislation, would basically outlaw Hamas in its entirety. It was announced by the Home Secretary, by the equivalent of the Interior Minister. It needs to be approved by Parliament. She's hoping that this will be done in the next few days. Apparently this was finalized. It had been worked on, you know, pushed by Israel for a long time because, among other things, the claim is, London, Britain has been a key point, in raising money for Hamas, sometimes under the guise of humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians, with funding channeled, among other things, to the Islamic University in Gaza, which is, we are told, at the forefront of technological development of Hamas weaponry, missiles, and so on. And therefore, you've got money being raised that leads to an improved capacity by Hamas to fire at and target Israel. Apparently, the agreement that this would happen was finalized when Naftali Bennett met with Boris Johnson on the sidelines of the environmental climate change conference in Glasgow just a couple of weeks ago. We are also told that to make the point and to give the British political leaders or authorities sufficient information, Israeli Shin Bet security service officials went to London and gave very specific information, including individuals who were involved in Hamas activities in Britain. Now, you know, I wouldn't say it's quite a shift in terms of this British government, but it's interesting that the British government is moving ahead with this, in the aftermath of much political debate in Britain and argument between the Conservative government and the Labour Party under its former leader, Jeremy Corbyn. And Jeremy Corbyn at one point, spoke of both Hezbollah and, Hamas representatives as his friends. And therefore, a lot of the coverage in Britain on this has been, you know, Jeremy Corbyn could face imprisonment if he continued to meet with his friends from Hamas. So in the British political climate, it's quite interesting. And it also comes as Israel's president, Isaac Herzog, is in Britain as of today for 3 days on a fairly major official visit in which he's going to meet with Boris Johnson, with Prince Charles and others. And therefore, you can certainly see some kind of greater interaction at the very top political level between Israel and Britain of late, which I think is interesting too.
Lazer?
Sure. So I would also add that the Home Secretary, Pradeep Patel, is the same individual who, as aid secretary in 2017, was ousted, had to step down because on a family vacation to Israel, she met with a series of senior Israeli officials about Israeli aid to Syria. She didn't properly disclose it. One of the officials was Prime Minister at the time, Benjamin Netanyahu. So she had to step down at the time. So this is someone who has a clear connection to and a clear affinity for Israel and for its security. I will also say that, as David alluded to, that there is a trend of increasing closeness between Israel and the UK. I would even go back to the David Cameron government when he really opened up military-to-military cooperation. And at the time, I was working in the IDF General Staff, and you could really see the frequency and the quality of the cooperation on the military side got much closer. And that was a strategic decision. And this is accompanied by increase in trade. And let's not forget the Brexit, that the UK has to carve out its own identity now in the region, independent of the EU. And I think they really have an intention of being a legitimate player, of redefining their role in the region. Obviously, a big part of that is their bilateral ties with Israel, their support for the Abraham Accords. Of course, their close ties to some of the Arab countries in the region. And all this takes place as the U.S. is shifting and changing its posture in the region as well. So I think we should expect more of these types of signs of increasing closeness between the U.K. and Israel.
Is it usual or unusual for Herzog, for the Israeli president, to be making this kind of trip to the UK? Is it more political? Is it more ceremonial? Where does that play into all of this?
I think we're going to have some analysis of it coming up at the Times of Israel as well, that he is carving out his identity as what he wants to be as president, right? It's somewhat of a ceremonial role, but it's a much more robust role than other ceremonial figures. He is the head of state, and he can play an important diplomatic role. And he seems to be pursuing that in some ways. Let's not forget, he spoke with Erdogan after the Israeli couple was released from detainment in Istanbul, Turkey last week. And, you know, he will be meeting with Boris Johnson in the UK. He will be meeting with parliamentarians in Westminster. So he is someone that, you know, was a politician beforehand, and he seems to be eager or willing to play a significant role, which is, you know, somewhat of a, you know, he has to kind of thread that needle in terms of not overstepping his bounds. But let's not forget there's been a series of world leaders who have come through, and as other presidents do, he holds state visits for them. But there's certainly a significant diplomatic role to his position. He seems to be pursuing it with some vigor.
It's a role that this government wants him to play. It's not this is not some kind of independent at odds at all. It's the government using the president to advance Israeli interests in a comfortable relationship. That hasn't always been the case between the presidency and Israeli governments. In this case, you certainly have that. And I would just add in two things about Britain. First of all, you know, Laser's right. Cameron came to Israel and made an incredibly supportive speech in the Knesset, but basically, generally, for a long time, British prime ministers have been very supportive of Israel, even though the wider political climate in Britain has been much more nuanced. But Tony Blair, Gordon Brown from the Labour Party, Cameron for sure, Theresa May for sure, and now Johnson. But, you know, a warm tie with Britain and deepening ties with Britain, I don't think Israeli strategic thinkers and government officials would think it can be any kind of a substitute for deep American support and engagement. It's good to have Britain, you know, seeing things the way Israel would like them to be seen, but it's the United States that matters. I'm sure that Herzog will raise the issues of Iran and the British take on Iran will be relevant. But again, it's the United States that is the key player where Israel's concerned, where some of the things that play out in this region are concerned, many of the things. An America that is less engaged, an America that is pivoting elsewhere, an America that is deemed by Israel, as would seem to be the case at the moment, to be mishandling the Iranian issue. A stronger British role is not going to be a compensation for that. It might help a little. It's another pressure point, but I don't think anyone would lose sight of the centrality of the US.
So then, and then just one last question, the UK decision to designate Hamas as a terror organization, you're saying there is influence that emanates from that, but not the tremendous kind of influence that comes from the US?
No, in the context of Hamas, it's a big deal because Hamas is apparently raising a great deal of money in Britain. So that, you know, they got a specific change that's actually going to make a difference. I'm talking about the real big picture. You know, there is one international heavyweight with immense potential to remake the way things play out, and that is the United States.
Once the nation's political powerhouse, the Israeli left has crumbled. What's behind this dramatic demise? The Jewish Quarterly, the leading international journal of ideas and culture, is back again with The Strange Death and Curious Rebirth of the Israeli Left, featuring a lead essay by Anshel Pfeffer and pieces by Raphael Zarum, Lauren Elkin, Richard J. Evans, and more. The Jewish Quarterly, issue 246, is out now. Available at good bookshops and newsagents, or subscribe now at jewishquarterly.com.
Laser, turning back to you, you went for a run with the UAE ambassador. How did it go? Was it in Tel Aviv along the beach?
And did you keep up? I think that's the key thing.
The question was, did he keep up? Did he keep up? I am a 7-time marathon runner. Did he keep up? So we met at in just north of Jaffa along the beach. We ran up to the Namal,
the northern port. Let's just give the distance.
Yeah, about 6 kilometers, kind of a straight line, pretty flat along the beach. The run came about because a very inspiring Ethiopian Israeli marathon runner. He's blind. He has his partner who accompanies him is running in the Abu Dhabi Marathon. And when the UAE ambassador, Mohammed Al-Khaja, heard about this, he, as a very athletic person, decided that he wanted to meet him, do a run with him, before the runner, Avi Solomon, flies out, for Wednesday's marathon. So they looked for a journalist who could keep up and interview while running and breathing. And I guess the Israeli press corps is not in very good shape because I was the only one who fit that bill. So it was a very nice event. We spoke about, obviously, Taj. We spoke about his personal time in Israel since February, some of his vision for the future of the Abraham Accords. And afterward, off the record, we're able just to speak one-on-one, just get to know each other and make that relationship. So it was a very nice event. And we wish luck to Avi Solomon running in the Abu Dhabi Marathon. He's very inspiring. And also, again, the guy who runs with him, another open Israeli named Daniel, he has to run at the same time. He has to be talking the entire time. They have a very, very professional and intricate communication between the two of them in terms of pace, in terms of direction, in terms of what's going on around them. So as I'm talking and trying to breathe with the ambassador, they're talking to each other all the time and being in very close communication. So it really was an interesting run. And I will note my dedication to the craft. As everyone finished up at the harbor and got into their diplomatic vehicles, I had to run back another 6 kilometers to my car, which is all the way back in Jaffa. So, working hard for the profession.
Always. Always. Wait, I'm curious about the ambassador. So how's life in Tel Aviv for him? Did he get personal at all? Give you any tidbits of information about what it's like for him?
Sure. So he seems to really be enjoying it, flourishing. He lives in Herzliya. He said the first day or night he was in Israel, he took a run along the beach and kind of soaked it in. You get the sense that he really sees the potential in the relations, but he's taking it slowly. He seems to be very aware that that you can push too hard and too fast, and it's better to take things slowly, work on areas of agreement, things like sports diplomacy, which this is an easy way to bring people together, and business and things like that. He doesn't seem to be going for any home runs right now, to mix metaphors, but he seems to be very interested in Israeli culture. He said he had started taking some Hebrew classes, has not found the time to really invest fully in them, because of the pace of the relationship. There's always some new developments that makes it hard for someone who's still building out his staff in the embassy to be on top of. So he seems like someone who's working hard, he's interested, and is really fascinated with what he's seen in Israel and in the region. And just, away from this particular interview, the UAE relationship, you see it tying into other diplomatic relationships that we have. So the UAE and Serbia are extremely close, and we had the Serbians open their trade and innovation office in Jerusalem, and that could be part of a triangle. India, we have talk about, the Bennett's visit to India early next year, and India seems to be, I wrote about this, seems to be envisioning an alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiative going through the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel to Haifa, and then on to Europe. So the UAE is really an integral component of Israel's expanding and changing ties to the larger Middle East and even beyond.
Okay. And Laser, finally, you wrote a story about State Department employees that are protesting the vaccine mandate. Very interesting. I'd love to hear more about that. What actually was happening there and what it means on the ground?
Sure. So this is, one of those things where you kind of get a sense that something's happening, and until you get someone that you trust and trusts you to give you the information, that it took some work, but I was able to view an internal cable from State Department diplomats and employees dozens of them from a variety of backgrounds who used the official dissent cable. So there was a dissent channel within State Department communications, which is supposed to give you a space or give diplomats a space for internal dissent amongst against official U.S. policy. So they used that official channel, and they claimed that President Biden's September 9th vaccine mandate for all federal employees violated their constitutional rights, violated the UN statement on universal human rights for autonomy of health and their own bodily decisions. And they said it also violated Vice President Kamala Harris's statements on the same day, September 9th, about the world being stronger when people are able to choose the own way that they live their lives. They talked about being in a hostile work environment where people won't sit with them. If they're not getting the vaccination, that they're being treated, being called plague rats and things like that in meetings. So this was a way to anonymously, I believe, I didn't get the names. That was not shared with me. Protest, and they said that they claim, I can't verify this, but there are many more who are afraid to come forward. So they say this is damaging the State Department morale and that it's in violation of many principles. Again, 40, 50 people, dozens of people, is only a fraction of the thousands of employees. But I think it is significant, and I think it's important to get that information. That's part of the discussions going on within the State Department about this issue.
And are we discussing the State Department employees only in the States, in D.C., around the world?
Around the world. Around mm-hmm. the world. Department's employees around the world, some in the United States, some abroad. But these are people who have, many of them are career diplomats who have given their entire professional career to the department, and they believe that there's a violation going on here. And I don't imagine that it'll change any official policy, but it's important that our reading public understands that this debate is there and it doesn't remain cooped up within the private channels of the State Department.
Thanks to both of you for being on the Daily Briefing today. We'll see you tomorrow. And in the meantime, have a good day and a good week.
Shavua Tov. Thanks, Jessica.
Have a great week. Shavua Tov.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to The Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.